Well, what we need in this world are critical thinkers, people that will take and ask questions and say why. What is the real reason for this? What is the foundation for this? What we don't need is more sheep that'll just be grazing along, you know, oblivious to everything around them. No social awareness, no awareness of anything going on. We don't need that. We need people that can be critical thinkers, and we need to cultivate critical thinking and scrap this conformity idea. That comes from the Heritage Foundation president, and I agree. Mary Claire Anselm is the policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation Center for Education Policy. Mary Claire, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So look at the colleges. We do our best as parents, I do, and you send your kids off to the indoctrination unit, and they come back having been bullied, having been told they can speak or not speak, or they might offend someone, and the hate speech and this and that and all this, as my mother would say, gobbledygook of nonsense is put into their heads, and they come back not the same people. It's true, isn't it?
It's absolutely true, and it's unfortunate to see, because this wasn't always the case. You know, our universities used to be one of the great accomplishments of our society. They used to be places where we would go to expand our minds, to encounter new ideas that might make us a little bit uncomfortable, but it was all worth it in pursuit of the truth. That's not the attitude on our colleges and university campuses these days. Any truth that might make you uncomfortable just might not be the truth, is the answer that many of our professors are giving our young students. And as a result, to use your word that you used earlier, where we're getting a lot of people who have sheep-like qualities who are simply following a leader and aren't interested in intellectual discovery.
Why do liberals fear me so much? Seriously, it's a serious question. Why do liberals fear me so much? Because if they didn't fear me or you, they would listen to what we have to say. But they fear that their arguments are inferior, that they are defective arguments. And they are, oftentimes. Mm-hmm. In fact, all times. The liberal argument of today is defective compared to the conservative narrative that we put here on this program. So they fear us. And they're so fearful of us talking that they try to shout us down. They try to intimidate us. They try to threaten us. They try to, well, they label us all the time, don't they?
Right. And I think the fear is evident by simply looking at which side is trying to shut down speech and which side is trying to have an open dialogue, an open conversation. And I think that it becomes pretty clear that which side is in pursuit of the truth when you see things like free speech zones, or you see things like shout downs or banning universities or banning conservative speakers from happening on campus. I mean, this is really sad stuff. And it's not creating an informed workforce. It's creating a generation of people who are wildly ill-prepared to face the real world where, you know, like it or not, you're going to encounter people who disagree with you.
You know, what's incredible, though, is I don't fear liberals. I don't fear a conversation with liberals. I just had one here on the program, a big one, just moments before you came on. I love the engagement. I love the back and forth. I love the conversation. I love the idea of putting argument up against somebody else's. You know, that's kind of, well, that's the way we were raised. In the Gruber household, you had to defend your point of view and your thoughts. That's kind of the way we were raised, and it's what I take out into the world. And it's sad to me to see people that don't go to college to find different points of view and hear different narratives and different arguments. They go there to be insulated from the rest of the world with the safe spaces, like you mentioned, with places where they have what, you know, therapy dogs and therapy goats or whatever the hell they have and whatnot. But it's a sad commentary on the intellect of America's young people.
It really is. And I think that it might need to start with parents who are considering sending their child off to college. You know, do that campus visit, do that tour, and you know, do a quick scan to see if you're seeing a lot of this ridiculousness that we're talking about here. And unfortunately, I think you'll find it at more campuses than you'll find it without. But, you know, it's time for parents to be taking a good hard look at, you know, is a college education worth the insanity that I'd be exposing my child to?
Well, Ivy believes, you know, and I share this with you because it's important. We've got Mary Claire Anselm here on the program. Ivy believes that college might be the single most dangerous place for young people, not just for the reason you put forth, but for a variety of reasons in addition to that. But what you've already said should give people pause. You should take a moment. Am I going to spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year or more potentially to send my kid to a place where they're going to program them into being a socialist when we know that socialism fails to being bullied into somebody who doesn't have an independent thought or is afraid to voice their opinion because they think they're going to get shouted down or labeled or mocked and made fun of. Is college a dangerous place?
Well, right. I mean, not only do we know that socialism fails, we know that socialism is one of the bloodiest ideologies that's ever occurred in our history. So certainly that's something that we shouldn't be encouraging our young people to be glorifying. But that's exactly what's happening on our college campuses. So I definitely think we need serious policy changes when it comes to our universities. That's why the Heritage Foundation has called for a significant rollback for the money that the federal government is giving these universities that's in many ways encouraging a lot of this bad behavior. We need to start holding colleges accountable, not only for their free speech violations, for the money that they're using, but for the quality of education that they're providing. Because I think far too often we're seeing that what these students are learning is poor quality at best.
There's no question. They're the degree they walk out with, you know, if you spend tens of thousands of dollars and have $80,000 or $100,000 in debt and you hold a gender studies degree or even a communications mm-hmm. degree, what are your job prospects? I mean, honestly, I mean, there's 10 billion, communications graduates. What are your job prospects? You're one in an ocean of people, are you not?
Well, a lot of these majors that, didn't seem to exist, 20, 30 years ago, they're self-fulfilling prophecies. I mean, the best job for someone with a gender studies degree is a professor of gender studies. And then it just becomes a vicious cycle where the university system seeks to feed itself. But the question is, why should American taxpayers be subsidizing courses like this? Courses that are teaching things that don't serve marketable value, that don't lead to a job at the other end. And
right.
quite frankly, a lot of the time are teaching falsehoods. I think it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, if you're a modern art major, well, guess what? You get to be a professor of modern art. You're exactly right about those things. And besides, I believe that the United States government should not be in the loan business. If you look back 15 mm-hmm. years when the United States government took over student loans, by and large, 99%, that's when the cost of college really took off. You have one government entity going through a middleman who then gives that money to another government entity. And guess what? They lost control of cost along the way. Can you imagine? Mary Claire Anselm here with us from the Heritage Foundation. I'll give you the last word today.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about the reason college is so expensive. It is precisely because of the federal government's involvement in lending to student loans. So if we want to hold colleges accountable, we want tuition prices to go down, and we want schools to start being held responsible for the courses that they're teaching and then the ridiculousness that's going on, we need to cut the purse strings coming from Washington. So reducing the federal lending programs is a top priority, or should be, for those who care about these issues.
Mary Claire, great conversation. Really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
There you have Mary Claire Anselm from the Heritage Foundation here today talking about education and well, what is a college today? Is it a place they teach young people to have critical thinking? Because a teacher's job is to teach a student how to think, not what to think. That's the disconnect today. How to think, not what to think. It is the Steve Gruber Show on a Tuesday, back after this.
Michigan Chamber of Commerce, celebrating 60 years of being the leading voice for business.
I'm Wendy Block, Vice President of Business Advocacy for the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. The Michigan Chamber has been the state's leading business advocacy organization for the past 60 years. Every day we work with state lawmakers in Lansing to promote and support policies that are essential for job creation, economic growth, and free enterprise. Our advocacy team defends business interests and actively promotes pro-business legislative initiatives. Whether it's education, environment, healthcare, or infrastructure, we are committed to standing up for all businesses, large and small. The Michigan Chamber delivers powerful advocacy and business solutions on behalf of our 6,000 members, representing 1 million employees across the state. We are proud to be the leading voice for business in Michigan.
Join the Michigan Chamber of Commerce today at michamber.com. The Michigan Chamber of Commerce, the leading voice for business, moving Michigan forward.
Presenting great moments in firstgov.gov history. For years, Americans have turned to firstgov.gov for their government information. 2000, Mrs. Marilyn Gorman takes online government to new heights, applying for Social Security benefits before breakfast.
And got him. Okay, who wants pancakes?
2002. In what later became known as the download heard round the world, the Duggins of Wichita print their own passport applications in their underwear.
Honey, get dressed. Looks like we're going to Luxembourg.
And 2004, FirstGov.gov astounds Anna Maria Montero of Biloxi by promptly answering all her emails, no matter how often she asks a question about the government.
Sure, the U.S. government can get back to me every time, but that son of mine, huh.
Make your own great moment. Log on today, FirstGov.gov. It's government made easy.